Shanti, 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 peace, peace. Greetings and salutations. It's good to be with you again. I trust you had a great week. If you didn't, too bad for you. Every week should be great. There shouldn't be any exceptions. It makes no difference what your body is doing. It has absolutely nothing to do with it. Every week should be great because in reality you are consciousness. You are great. That is your true nature. Everything else does not matter. It appears to matter, but to whom does it appear to matter? You are absolute reality, pure awareness. Everything else is incidental. Therefore, you should not take life too seriously. You shouldn't take it seriously at all. If you look at life the way it is, it appears confusing because things are always changing. You may expect one thing and you get another thing. But if you stick to your guns, and you keep identifying with the self, which you are, then it will not matter what happens. This is why the transcriptions that we give you are most important. Due to the fact they go over the talk, and you can take your time reading it. Let me remind you once again the way you should read the transcriptions. Go through it, the whole thing, the first time. Then take it paragraph by paragraph. Concentrate, cogitate on each paragraph. Even if it takes you all night. Do not go through the transcriptions like you do a book and say, where's the next one? But try to go through each paragraph intensely, so to speak. Try to read between the lines. What does this really mean? Take your time. If you spend your time reading the transcripts, practicing self-inquiry, and coming to satsang, then you can't lose with the stuff I use. But if you run around all over the place and go from book to book, teacher to teacher, you become confused. You don't know who to follow, what to do. Of course, the ultimate truth is within yourself. You are the ultimate truth. That's where all the answers are. Sometimes it's better to stay by yourself and read nothing. And sometimes it's good to concentrate on certain works for a while. But not to go in 1 week to 13 different books and 10 different teachers. If you do, you'll become completely disgusted with the whole spiritual thing. Something else we should talk about is this. Most disciples still believe that the object of jnana is to change bad experiences into good. This couldn't be further from the truth. We are not trying to change poverty into abundance, sickness into health, misery into happiness, and so forth. The whole idea is to realize that they're both imposters. The body has absolutely nothing to do with the teacher. Let the body do what it may. If the body wants to become sick, watch it become sick. If it wants to become healthy, watch it become healthy. If it wants to become rich, watch it become rich. If it wants to become poor, watch it become poor. Yet it has absolutely nothing to do with you. You are beyond that. To the extent you feel your real self, to that extent will you feel your body less. So if you feel your real self 40%, you will feel your body 40% less. If you feel your real self 70%, you will feel your body 70% less, and so forth. You are not your body. The body cannot be anything without your mind. It is your mind that feels pain in the body. It is your mind that feels depressed and causes the body to become ill. It is your mind which catches cold. It is your mind which develops cancer. And it appears as your body. But if you had no mind, your body would simply be an inert piece of flesh. It wouldn't be sick, it wouldn't be healthy. Therefore, when you think about being healthy, you have to be sick first. Otherwise, why would you want to be healthy? One leads to the other. When you think about taking care of your body all the time, you're simply saying to yourself that you don't want to become sick, so you're taking care of your body all the time. Therefore, your mind will simply give you a taste of each experience over and over again. That's why sometimes you catch a cold, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you have a fever, sometimes you don't. And so forth. Stop identifying with your body. Stop identifying with your mind. Leave them both alone. It really makes no difference what they do. they're not important. If you're inclined to exercise, exercise. If you're not, don't. But don't keep thinking and feel guilty that you have to do something. Or if you don't do it, something is going to happen. You and I both know people who have never exercised a day in their life. And they're 90 years old and they're healthy as a horse. How healthy is a horse? And we both know people who exercise violently every day. And then they just drop dead. Or they contract some disease. It all has to do with your karma. It has absolutely nothing to do with what you do with your body. Don't believe that by eating certain foods, you're going to become healthier. But if it is your karma to eat certain foods to become healthier, you will do it. Do not be for or against anything. What I'm trying to say is, leave the world alone. Leave your body alone. Leave your mind alone. Leave others alone. Some of you are saying, but Robert, don't I have to learn how to control my mind? How can I leave it alone? You control it by leaving it alone. Don't you see? By interfering with it, you make it stronger. Because you're giving it power by admitting to yourself you have a mind that's out of control and now you've got to put a stop to it. That statement alone gives more power to your mind. Where all you simply have to do is observe your mind, observe your thoughts, question to whom do they come, question again to whom do they come. Every time the thoughts come, observe them. But do not try to take any action to control your mind. As I said, if you do, you're feeding your mind. That's the fuel that makes your mind become stronger and stronger and stronger. By self-inquiry, you're not interfering with your mind. You're simply asking in a gentle way, to whom do these thoughts come? To me? Who am I? Or you're becoming the witness to your thoughts. And then you finally ask, who's the witness? I am. I am. I am. Somehow I found if you ask three times and you answer three times, it has more effect. Have any of you had that experience? In other words, if you begin the self-inquiry process and you ask, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? Three times. And then you wait and ask a few times again. And then you wait. And when the thoughts come to you, use the number three again and you ask, to whom do these thoughts come? To whom do these thoughts come? To whom do these thoughts come? I somehow feel if you try that, it will be more effective. The only thing you're trying to do is to stop your mind from thinking. You're not trying to become self-realized, you're self-inquiring. For you are already self-realized. Self-inquiry is to still the mind. When the mind becomes still, everything takes care of itself. Remember this. You are not using self-inquiry to awaken. If you do, you will never awaken. For you are using a method to become something you already are. Have no attitude when you practice self-inquiry. Have no desire. No need. In other words, do not think, I have to get enlightened before I die, because I don't want to come back. That's the worst thing you can do. For you are believing deeply, aren't you, that you are the mind and the body. Because you're saying intensely to yourself, I have to become enlightened. And as you know by now, your personal I can never become enlightened because it doesn't exist. So you're working under an illusion when you say, I've got to become enlightened before I leave my body. Rather, do the procedure. Follow the principles as outlined. Have no want, no desire, no request, nothing. You have to realize again, there is no birth and no death for the self. There's no one who ever dies. No one is ever born. When you say, I have to get enlightened before I die, you have everything backwards. You're believing something has to happen before you leave your body. But the happening has already happened. All you're trying to do is to quiet your mind so you can see it. Can you see that? You're just trying to quiet your mind. You're not trying to get enlightened. You're not trying to awaken. You're not trying to become liberated. You already are. You think you're something else than that. So you practice self-inquiry, which is the fastest way to wake up. Because you think you have to wake up. But imagine you didn't believe you had to wake up. You did not have that belief. Would you have to do anything? Of course not. Does God have to do anything to know He's God? Of course not. You're doing all of these things because you think you're a human being. You think you are mortal. You think you've got problems. You think there's something wrong. Or you can believe the opposite. You think everything is right. The world, I mean. You think you're very happy. You think you've got everything you want. So everything is right. that's an attachment to good things. It's just as bad as attaching yourself to bad things. They're both the same, they're impostures. So if you attach yourself to material good things, you may have a so-called happy material life in your body at this time because you deserve it karmically. But there's a lot of karma you have to experience when you're identifying with the good material things. And when you leave your body, you come back again, things will not be so good for you this time. You will experience the opposite. For you have to have a taste of everything. Do not be fooled. Do not be deluded into believing, if I experience a good material life, I'm making progress. Think about that for a moment. If you experience a good material life, you are not making spiritual progress. It has nothing to do with your spiritual progress. It's a completely different ballgame. Spiritual progress is when you transcend good and bad. When you become the witness to all of your experiences. As an example, if you win the lottery tomorrow and you win $50 billion, you become the witness. You realize this is karmic. It doesn't change you. It doesn't turn you into a blubbering idiot. You understand this too is karmic. If you get hit by a train and have to cut off your legs and your arms, the same thing. There's no difference. It's karmic. If you do not train yourself to see that, you're going to have a long way to go before you become free and wake up. Everything you attach yourself to in this world, person, place, and thing, keeps you back. You have to become totally non-attached. You have to become totally free of attachment to your body, to your mind, and to others. This doesn't mean you become a cold fish and you don't care about others. It simply means that you understand. You realize that everything is you. Whatever is happening in this world is happening to you. You are the cause. And when you realize there is no cause, then there's no you. And you're free. First you realize that whatever you see in this world, the beauty you see outside, the trees, the sky, the mountains, the smog, everything is you. Then you ask the question, who am I? And you realize the I is impersonal. It has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with the world. It has nothing to do with the universe. The I is I am. I am that I am. Pure awareness, pure intelligence, nirvana. That's really I. But when you identify your I as a personal I, and you say, I am experiencing this, and I see that, and I feel happy because I see a tree, I feel sad because I see something wrong, then you are making the I personal. And you begin to feel that you are a body and a mind. You have to suffer the consequences thereof. So, let's talk about you. How do you see life? What's been happening to your life since you started coming to satsang? And since you started practicing self-inquiry? What's going on in your life? If everything is the same, or if your affairs are becoming better, you've got a problem. But if things appear to be becoming relatively worse, and things are happening to you that never happened before, that's a blessing in disguise. It sounds strange, doesn't it? I bet you thought I was going to say things will get better for you materially, and you'll be happier than you've ever been in your life. You've got the wrong idea about these things. Material happiness does not bring you realization. The closer you get to realization, the more upheaval there is in your life. That sounds strange. It's not always like that. It depends on the maturity of the soul. There's no soul. It depends on the maturity of something, of nothing. It depends on maturity, it depends. It, nothing. But when you're speaking in delusion, you believe that karmically you have accrued certain debits that will come to you slowly but surely through many incarnations. But as you begin to mature spiritually, and as you become closer to the goal, as you get closer to awakening, there will be many upheavals in your life due to the fact all of the karma is coming to you at once. That's how it affects some people, not everyone. All of your karma that would take many incarnations to get rid of is coming to you all at one time. That's why there appears to be upheavals in your life. So you did not become despondent. You do not feel sorry for yourself. You do not think something is wrong. You rejoice. You observe. You watch. You can say, I wonder what's going to happen now. And you inquire, to whom has this come? To whom has this come? To whom has this come? If you're doing it correctly, you will find you're becoming less and less attached to the situation. Until finally, there is no situation at all. There is no longer any karma. There is no longer anything you have to go through. You become totally free. I admit also that this is somewhat paradoxical. For when you take great sages like Ramakrishna, Ramana Maharshi, and some others that appear to be going through such dastardly experiences of cancer, where the flesh was running away, so you ask, did they have to go through their karma? I thought they didn't have any. And that's a good question. I'm glad I thought of it. The answer, of course, is they are not going through anything. It appears to us that they are. It's our experience. We're going through the experience. It's our karma, not theirs. Does that make sense? We're going through that kind of karma. Sages are absolutely free from karma, no matter what they appear to be going through. They are totally free. But with our eyes, with our emotions, with our minds, we observe something else. We need that experience to watch them suffer. In truth, they're not suffering. We are suffering. Many people that I spoke to that watched Ramana Maharshi when he was dying, months later, years later, they became totally different people. The word suffering left their consciousness. That never disturbed them again. In other words, when they saw death, when they saw man and humanity as a man, they completely transcended it and realized it did not exist. Remember, the world does not exist. Human beings do not exist. your body and mind does not exist. The universe does not exist. God up in the sky does not exist. So how can suffering exist? Can't you see that death, suffering, and the rest of it is part of the grand Maya? It's all a joke. It does not exist. So how can Ramana Maharshi's body die of cancer? How can Ramakrishna's body die of cancer? If you think that these people die of cancer, you are acknowledging that the world exists. You are acknowledging that suffering and death are a reality. And you cannot awaken this way. This is why, when you can't help it, and you still react to these things, you should try to become impersonal. Where you just watch, you have a great compassion, but you do not react. If a person needs help, you help them. You do the best you can, but you do not react. Why? Because something in your heart tells you this is an illusion. I can't say in one breath that the world and my body does not exist, and in the second breath say Ramana Maharshi died of cancer. It's a contradiction. So my question to you is, what do you see all day? What did you see today in the world, in your life? What did you feel today? Did you feel stress? Did you feel burnt out? Did you feel there was something wrong with someone or with yourself? Did you feel things are not going right for you? Or did you feel the opposite? Did you feel everything is so beautiful in your life you can't stand it? You've got everything you need and you're satisfied and contented? They're both impostures. If you get stuck on one or the other, you have to keep working on yourself till you become unstuck. And you do this by inquiring, to whom has this come? Who's seeing all this? Who's feeling all these things? I am. Well, who am I?
teeth. And I got kind of confused and didn't finish it. I think I have it straight in my mind now. Since both space and time are creations of the mind and exist only in the mind, then if I'm contemplating a situation in which time is an element, then I'm spinning my wheels. There will be nothing accomplished. For instance, of both desire and fear come in this category, since desire expects something better to happen in a non-existent future, or fear expects something bad to happen also in a non-existent future. Fairly accurate intellectual concept of what's going on.
Whatever is going on, you simply ask yourself, to whom does it come? You make the whole situation very simple. When you think you're lost in time or space, or whatever you think is going on in your life, you go within yourself. And you ask, who is feeling this? To whom do these things come? And you follow it through. It makes no difference what it is. It makes no difference how long you've had it, or how much it annoys you, or whatever it's doing to you. It makes no difference how complicated or how lengthy it may be. It's always the same. To whom does this come? Who's feeling this? I am? What is the source of the I? And you abide in the I, following it back to your heart center. And then everything will take care of itself.
Thank you. Another thing I've been wondering about, and maybe so, that whatever transpires in the waking state is no more or less real than what happens in the dream state, or hallucination, or a drug trip, or anything else that we think is transpiring. No one of those is any more real than another.
That is correct.
Thank you. Another thing I might mention, when I first came up here, you asked me why I asked these questions. I forgot what I said, but these things that I have in my mind are intellectual concepts, and while some of them I feel are pretty valid, it also feels right to have them evaluated in the light of the absolute, and I feel that you're in a position to do that.
There is always a personal I that has to evaluate.
Well, I have to change all of that to make it it.
There's nothing to evaluate. There's just in becoming, in being. You do not have to evaluate anything.
Mind what you're saying, Sri Bhagavan said, tell somebody you thank God for the things that seem to you to be good, but you don't thank Him for the things you think are bad, and that is where you go wrong. That's a tough one.
It is a tough one. We have our impression what good is supposed to be. And we have our impression of what bad is supposed to be. And we desire one above the other. That's the mistake. To have the desire for either. The desire has to be transcended. So that there's nobody left to have any desire whatsoever. And you become the witness to everything.
What about just the desire to understand that everything is all right?
That's no good either. Because there's a desire means there's a personal I. There's a personal I that wants everything to be right. What is right? There is no right.
Well,
all is well is merely telling yourself that the personal I does not exist.
So there's a difference between all is well and everything is all right?
All is well means everything is good just the way it is.
Yes.
This second. Everything is well. There's nothing wrong no matter how it looks, how it appears, and to whom it comes. All is well. It's like saying, I am that. And you become still, you don't qualify it. When you try to qualify it, that's where the mistake comes. You make a statement, all is well. I am that. I am. I. Silence. It's all the same. But when you qualify it, you spoil.
I don't see the difference between all is well and everything is all right.
Well, if it's the same thing, that's fine. It depends how you interpret it in your own mind.
But whatever's happening is right.
Whatever is happening is right.
Mm-hmm.
However it appears. Makes no difference what it is.
If I call it right or wrong.
Exactly.
You're hung up either way.
Exactly. Everything just is.
Well, the word well also has a positive connotation.
Then get rid of it.
So, I mean, but I don't mean it when you're in prayer.
I understand. The less that is spoken, the better off you are. Because we get into playing mind games. When I tell you all is well, I do so because I want you to know that everything is just the way it's supposed to be. There's no right, there's no wrong.
Well, then that's maybe better than saying it's all right or all is well. Everything is the way it's supposed to be.
Enjoy.
Is it the way it's supposed to be, or just the way it is?
The way it is.
Nothing's supposed to be. You have to cut the supposed to be out too.
Is it the way it is?
Yeah, just the way it is.
Or is it just the way?
Full stop.
Or just the way it is.
The next thing is silence.
Right. All words lead to more words.
Well, how does compassion, you mentioned compassion and moving to the heart center, how does the compassion, if none of this exists, how come compassion would exist on the human?
As long as you believe you are the body mind, then you should have compassion. When you become the self, you become the epitome of compassion automatically. But it's a different kind of compassion. It's a knowing, a being. You just become. It's a bliss consciousness thing.
There's no emotion tied to this necessarily.
There are no emotions whatsoever, no. It's an experience. It's beyond an experience. It's in the silence. But as long as you identify with the body and you think you are the body, then you should think of words like love, compassion, joy, harmony. And keep inquiring to whom do these come. Until you transcend.
How does this affect the life of the young who marries and has children and has responsibility?
There's no effect. It doesn't affect them at all. There's no difference.
It doesn't affect the self. What about the Robert, for instance? About your experience in marriage and in relationships.
No experience, just something that's going on. There's no real experience involved. It's just something that's done. The body's doing. That's the appearance. It's the same like having cancer, what I was talking about before. Who sees all this? Who's the doer?
There's nobody to whom this happens.
Right.
Including the pain that would be associated with this?
Pain, happiness, they're both the same.
So the pain I hear an excruciating pain. So that would, you would also ask,
to whom does it come? And the greater you're able to disassociate yourself from the body, the less you will feel the pain.
Nisargadatta answered that very nicely. Somebody asked him, are you in great pain? And he answered, no, there is great pain.
Yeah. Yes. Good.
It says anything like I am this or I am that or anything, it's strictly identification that the mind is doing.
The ego mind is doing all that, asking that question.
And that's like the screen, all the stuff that's on the screen.
The images. Again, try to make everything simple. Do not become complicated. It's a very simple thing. you merely observe what's going on in your body or in the world. You do not react. And you ask, to whom does it come? In a gentle way. And then you realize, I feel this. You therefore want to find out, who is the I that feels this? And if you follow the I, you will find out that the I never existed. So there's no one to feel anything. The whole situation is a lie. Because there is no I. If there is no personal I, then nothing associated with I exists whatsoever.
Be perfectly just as long as heaven is perfect, which the understanding is that no changes need be made, nothing need be added, nothing need be subtracted.
Sure.
The Saganata also said, I understand realization is of the fact that you are not a person.
But what do you say?
Of this understanding of the statement.
What does that do for you personally?
There's a feeling that I'm on the right path.
If it makes you go deeper within yourself, then that's good. Otherwise, it's just intellectual jargon.
Too much rhetoric. You tell me when that.
I think I read something like that also in that same book, but it said you're not a person. There's no such thing as a person. There's only limits and restrictions.
We're all saying the same thing in different words. But again, what does it do for you?
So when I say that, it brings up my definite my humanness.
So then don't say it. Shanti, 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 Om. Peace. Peace.